Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Yanks Go Yard Podcast with Adam Weinrib and Thomas Carinante.
Welcome to the Yanks Go Yard Podcast. I'm Adam Weinrib alongside Thomas Carinante. The Yankees' four-game home split with the Mariners fed into a West Coast trip, beginning with a frisky San Diego team that featured so many ex-Yankees that it'd make your head spin, which resulted in one of the more wins of the season, of the decade, on Friday night. Just Yu Darvish against the Yankees lineup getting pummeled by every hitter in a way too easy victory. The Yankees took Saturday's game as well before falling late on Sunday in a game that most people probably missed in favor of the New York Rangers and Florida Panthers playing game three. But a series win, pretty solid way to start a West Coast swing. They are back in action against the Angels starting Tuesday night and the surprisingly hot Giants over the weekend before heading back to the good time zone, but we're off to a solid start. John Birdie's injury, not great, but not as bad as initially anticipated. We welcome DJ LeMahieu back today. And why is everyone obsessed with all these absolutely nothing Juan Soto quotes? And why we'd rather talk about the on-field action than Scott Boras whispering to his client in sunny California. Thanks for joining us. You can find us live every Monday and Tuesday, typically, but today's Tuesday. I'm looking at the calendar because Monday was a holiday and the Yankees did not play. Why? Couldn't tell you. Maybe you watched Cubs Brewers. Maybe you watched the Orioles beat up on the Red Sox. Can't tell you how to live your life, but I can tell you there was no Yankees baseball yesterday for no discernible reason. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is that you collect your podcasts. Gotta catch them all. You'll find us. I am joined today, as always, welcome to the show, by Thomas Carinante, who's going to start us off with an offer.
Sure am. What's up, everyone? Hope you had a good Memorial Day weekend. Another Yankee series victory. We'll take it. If you want another victory, head on over to Caesars Sportsbook. They are looking to cover your first bet up to $1,000. Unbelievable. New customers will get a second chance bet up to $1,000 when they sign up using our promo code YGY1000. It's numerals 1000. That means if your first bet loses, you will get your full wager returned as a bonus bet. Again, up to $1,000. $1,000, baby. Caesars offers daily profit boosts as well as Caesars rewards credits on every single wager, which can be redeemed for bonuses, sports tickets, other VIP experiences. Good stuff. So signing up with our code YGY1000 not only covers your first bet, but it also gives you access to this awesome rewards program. So if you're looking to join Caesars, please download the app. Register with our code, once again, YGY1000, to make sure that first bet is covered. This offer is only available to new customers who are 21 and older and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly. Check the episode description for full terms of the offer to see if you qualify. Big win for the Yanks, I thought. Pretty cool. The Padres are kind of a contender. They have a really good team. And it was funny, Scott Boras did a lot of chit-chatting over the weekend, and he was saying that had Peter Seidler not passed away, there was a good chance that Soto, at the very least, would have been spending the 2024 season in San Diego because he was hell-bent on keeping Soto in San Diego for the long haul. We don't know if that would have been possible, but you can probably imagine all of the financial issues that have stemmed from his death, the scrambling that has had to, you know, come out of all of it. It's difficult enough to run a baseball team. It's even more difficult when you have a situation with the owner like that. Rest in peace to him. He seemed to be like one of the last few genuine owners. You know what I watched? I started watching last night. The Netflix thing on the old White Sox owner.
Yeah.
See that?
Bill Veeck.
Yeah. Bill Veeck. Yeah. I mean, like those, what the fuck? Those people don't exist anymore. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. But Peter Seiler really, felt like one of those guys when he gave those interviews, last year and the year before, when the Padres were making all those heavy hitting moves to get into contention. It's what you want to see from your team. And they were arguably the most aggressive team up until this offseason when the Dodgers did what they did. But yeah, makes you wonder what might have happened throughout the course of history if sadly he hadn't passed away. But yeah, Yankees come out of this series victorious. They see a lot of former players in this series. Weird stuff. I don't even know where to begin because, again, no pod yesterday. Yankees off day yesterday, which was even creepier. And now we got to wait until 9:40 again tonight for a game. Like, what's going on?
And there are no early West Coast games all week.
No, zero.
9:40 for the Angels. Go into the weekend. Some 10:15 games. I mean, best of luck to everybody. Chef knows I recommend a Celsius, so continue to consume those. But not don't continue to consume those. Just have one a day. Don't make me come find you and figure out how many you're having. Just stay restricted. But yeah, I mean, you look at the – I think it's time – my headline for the weekend is it's time to recalibrate our expectations for this team again. Because if you're still stuck, as I am, in the mode of, hey, you know, very good team, going to have good offensive weeks, nice spurts, but they're going to struggle against really high-caliber pitching, and it's hard to expect – you know, it's hard to expect much from any team against really high-caliber pitching and high-caliber righties – you know, and you look at the probables and you see Darvish on a heater, 25 straight scoreless innings, followed by Dylan Cease, who their major, somewhat unexpected trade acquisition this offseason. A lot of people expected Cease to get traded, but maybe at the deadline and maybe to a team with a slightly brighter immediate future in the Padres, but all of a sudden they make the move. They use Drew Thorpe, who the Yankees gave them in the Juan Soto trade, to acquire Cease. And you're like, wait, what are they doing? Are they buying? Are they selling? How do we get here? And then Joe Musgrove in the third game, who was their incumbent ace, tough ERA so far this year, battled some injury issues, but three really top quality pitchers in a row, all of them throw from the right side. I expected limited offense in this series. Hopefully the Yankees could take it, but felt like a situation where they might be trying to fend off a sweep against Musgrove on Sunday. Nope. Musgrove game's the only one they lose. They don't hit him, of course. You could every so often you can take one off. Aaron Judge, another monstrous home run to set an early tone against Cease on Saturday, and not a dramatic win, and definitely not, probably not going in the Yankees Classic folder on Friday, but maybe just one of the more enjoyable wire-to-wire wins of the last five, six, 7 years, the entire Aaron Judge era. Like, yeah. If you're framing a Yankees win, it's Yu Darvish just implodes early and surrenders home runs to Judge, Soto, Stanton, Gleyber Torres, who needed it.
Could have been one to Verdugo.
Yeah, and this one was out of reach very early. And it would have been just a totally enjoyable experience beginning to end if John Birdie had not crumbled in a heap late in this game. Although, ironically, not hilariously, but ironically, don't these infield log jams always tend to work themselves out? Oh, LeMahieu's coming back. LeMahieu's coming back. How are they going to find room for him? You know, Jamai Jones, they're going to lose. They have this good bench for the first time in a long time. Well, there goes that bench. So we'll cover that later, of course. But I think I was just most impressed by the fact that it was evident from the first hour of competition in this series that we probably weren't really going to have to sweat this one out too much. And then they just took care of business in the first two and had a mid-game lead. Not a large lead, but had a 1-0 lead in the middle of the third game. And if not for Gleyber Torres' error, who knows what happens there. But take care of business in the first two, then no one really has to worry about the third one. And I was very impressed that go out to San Diego, tough opponent, juiced opponent, team that really wants to beat the Yankees in this series and has the pitching to do it and has been coming around offensively. And then just the first game, nope, scoreless streak from the starters continues. And we'll give kudos to Saturday's starter as well. But moment I was happiest, I think, overall, the stand homer on Friday, just because it was the moment where it was like, and now we're comfortable. Okay, great. I'll kick my feet up a little bit. But overall, that first game, just sort of a why is this so easy spectacular?
That's the obvious one. Like when that was arguably the coolest inning that we've seen in I don't know how long. Just Soto going yard against his former team, then Judge not wasting a second, putting one into the second deck, and then Stanton, absolute rocket. And yeah, you were right. At that point, you knew the game was over. And then Verdugo on the next at bat hits one to the wall. Should have been out. Should have been a double at least. But he was caught admiring it and only got a single. But for me, this is more personal. My happiest moment was Saturday night. I was gearing up to watch the game. I was working a little bit that day. I cleaned my apartment that day, and then I made some dinner. And then I said, you know what? It's Memorial Day weekend. I'm going to go to the ice cream parlor. So I walked on down to the ice cream parlor, ended up taking a little bit too long because there was a big long line because everyone's in town now down by the Jersey Shore. They're getting excited. I got my ice cream. I come back. I missed the top for I missed the top half of the first inning. Flick on the TV. It's 2-0 Yankees. What happened? Aaron Judge, another home run. Solo shot off Dylan Cease. I mean, a two-run shot off Dylan Cease. There's no better feeling than turning the game on and you have a lead. And there's no better feeling turning the game on and knowing that your hottest hitter is still just absolutely scorching against some, you know, Dylan Cease was regarded, I think, up until his last start. I think he had a blow up last start before the Yankees. I don't know if it was blow up, but it wasn't up to par with what he's been doing, but he's been muttered as an NL Cy Young candidate since the start of the season. Mm-hmm. Because he left a really bad White Sox team. He joined a Padres rotation that was much more respectable and obviously knows how to work with pitchers a lot better, it seems, than the White Sox do. So that was it for me, popping down, eating my ice cream, seeing the Yankees with the lead, and then getting a coast-to-coast win there.
I went to an ice cream parlor yesterday, too. It's what you do on Memorial Day weekend, especially when it was nasty work out yesterday for everybody who wanted to have a relaxing additional Monday off. It turned the Monday off into just kind of like I'm checking my watch, counting down to like, we get back to the work week. I have a lot of shit to figure out. Like, what is this? I wasn't actually thinking that because I love taking moments of reflection, and it was a good one. It was a worthwhile day. But yeah, I had my ice cream yesterday. Espresso martini ice cream.
Ooh, they got booze in it?
From Tarico. Kind of tasted boozy. That's that me espresso. And we had a good time. But yeah, it was the only bad Yankee game of the week was Sunday, and it got a little bit lost in the shuffle. We'll take some pot shots at the people responsible for that. But expected sort of a high lift weekend, late drama, maybe have to take some shots and wax at Johnny Brito and Wandy Peralta. We faced Brito. You know, these are guys that showed up, but you didn't really have to face them in any, high leverage opportunities necessarily. Michael King somehow not participatory in this series, which is the way I prefer it. I think I didn't really want to see him. There's really no good outcome there. Either you destroy him or he destroys you. Don't want to think about that. Just want to see Juan Soto doing his business against everybody else. And I had a good time. You Darvish, man. I don't know what that curveball was doing on Friday night, but that was rocket fuel. So thanks, man. Unsung hero, I just want to give credit to Marcus Stroman, who we chatted on the Monday show last week, I believe, about like, hey, look, the Yankees aren't going to get 7 or 8 All-Stars probably, even though they did get a whole pile of All-Stars in 2022. So you never know. But this was specifically before Clay Holmes blew up against the Mariners, too. We were like, Holmes has a 0 ERA. Clark Schmidt's putting himself, Clark Schmidt and Luis Gil. Neither one of them was guaranteed to make the rotation out of spring training. And all of a sudden, they're both in all-star contention. Nestor Cortez has the highest ERA in the rotation. It's 3.29 entering Tuesday's start against the Angels. I don't know if Carlos Rodon is going to get that all-star consideration. The whip is high. There are a lot of great pitchers in baseball. I think he's still – you take the season he's having 10 out of 10 times, but I think still outside looking in at all-star contention. I'm going to put Marcus Stroman in that bucket, though. Someone who we did not deign to mention on the last show had a couple of iffy starts by the Yankees rotation standards entering last week. And then what does he do? His first 9 starts – quite good, but there were a few where the walks were not quite under control and the power output wasn't what he was used to limiting and all that. And he was limiting damage, but he could have been, not quite himself. Last 2 starts, Absolutely brilliant against the Mariners, and it gets blown up by the bullpen. And in the wake of that start, when he could have been infuriated by that happening, takes to social media and thanks Aaron Boone for being a great manager and says Clay Holmes is the best closer in baseball and we'll get him next time. Basically, he's more level-headed after the team blew his best start of the year than fans of the team were. The actual guy has a better perspective on this than fans of the New York Yankees. And how does he follow that up going on the road in San Diego and having the same start? You know, just as good. 7 1/3 innings against Seattle, 3 hits, just the 1 run on a homer. 6 innings, 3 hits, shutout. 1 walk in each of those 2 starts, 5 strikeouts. And 1 walk is notable because he is somebody who typically has fantastic control and command. But his previous 4 starts, 5 walks in Milwaukee, 5 walks against Detroit, 5 1/3 innings, limited them to just 1 run. 2 walks against Houston and 3 at Minnesota. But his last 3 starts, 2 hits, 6 innings of shutout ball, 3 hits, 7 1/3 innings, just the solo homer, and then 6 shutout in San Diego, lowering his ERA from 3.80 to 2.76 at this point. The FIP, still 4.55. That's what's going to happen when you are nibbling and when you are less than confident and you are walking batters. But the last 3 starts trending in the right direction, and to come back to not just talk the talk but walk the walk coming out of the bullpen, blowing his best start of the year, I'm going to give him the hat tip for this week.
I love Marcus Stroman, man. What a 180 all that has done. I think everybody who – there was a lot of nasty tweets out there when he signed with the Yankees, or like when the rumors started to come up, and they were like – they were unbelievable at that point. You were like, they're not doing this. There is no way they're doing this. And then people were like, I will actively root against this guy if he signs with the Yankees. And it's like, no, you – A, no, you won't. B, why are you saying that? Because they could sign him in 20 minutes and then you're looking like a moron. A lot of people owe Marcus Stroman an apology. Look, we're 2 months into the season. I think the early returns are very promising in terms of like his vibe and what he brings to the rotation in terms of his tranquility and just the overall team attitude. I feel like previously he's been regarded as a selfish guy. And I didn't follow the teams he was on previously. So, you know, sometimes the headlines take you for a loop and you start to believe stuff that's not true, but maybe this is where he's always wanted to be. And that's been all the difference in this. I don't know. Amazing performances from him. But my unsung hero is maybe this is too high profile, but I'm going with Anthony Volpe. On base 6 times this series, 2 in each game. Mm-hmm. 19 game hitting streak, youngest player since Joe DiMaggio to extend a Yankees hitting streak this long. He's doing exactly what he needs to do in the leadoff spot after we had, you know, I think rightful complaints after his first, 20 games there. Mm-hmm. It was not looking good at all. He wasn't swinging the bat even close to what he was doing when he was down in the bottom of the order. Didn't seem like he was timing pitches right. Seemed like his swing mechanics changed a little bit. Might have been trying to been doing too much, but I think he's in a really comfortable spot right now. That leadoff triple on Friday, that got the series going for me. When you start any game off like that and give your offense the best chance possible to score a run at the onset of a series, that triple does it. Set the tone. Yankees win the next two, win those first 2 games easy, coast to coast. And then they have that chance on Sunday. But yeah, I mean, what he's doing right now, especially against good pitching, I think can't go overlooked. And for some reason, I don't know if I'm being ignorant here, but it feels like the hitting streak is going a tad underreported. Is that me?
No, I agree. What's funny to me about Volpe is we have just an unbelievably reminiscent situation of the mid to late 90s right now going on, where every time, so Volpe last year, right, 20 homers, 20 steals, but it was a shockingly empty season.
Yeah.
You know, that's very good for a rookie, objectively, but the data wasn't there. The slumps were prolonged. Nothing other than the power output was there, and most of those stolen bases came early in the season. So it was hard to end last year feeling very good about his immediate future. But the Yankees were claiming, all right, well, we feel like he could take the Bobby Witt Jr. path. He can wake up. You know, we'll see a lot of year-over-year improvement into his sophomore season. And we said, okay, believe when we see it. And now we're seeing it, right? He's hitting .282. Transition to the leadoff spot wasn't seamless, but now he's found his footing. .349 over his last 15 games. The power output, not bad. .790 OPS, .355 OBP he gets on base. And all you ever hear when you praise him online is, you know, Gunnar Henderson and Bobby Witt Jr. are better.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Awesome. So Volpe might be the third best young shortstop in baseball right now. It's possible. But that's exactly where we were in the late 90s, where anytime you said Derek Jeter is the perfect fit for this team, leadership, you know, on base skills, you know, intangibles going the other way, et cetera, people would say Nomar's better and Alex Rodriguez is better. Bobby Witt Jr. and A-Rod, remarkably, like, neither one, both outside the AL East. Both incredible raw talents, neither made a postseason impact early in their careers. And let's see if the Royals could continue on the path that they're on. But that's sort of the allegory there. Like, raw talent, yeah, Witt Jr. and A-Rod probably were the best at that point. AL East rivals. Gunnar Henderson does appear to be a better player than Anthony Volpe at this point in time. Nomar Garcia-Parra in the early years was putting up .370 averages, and the counting stats were better than Jeter's. But when it came to postseason play, nowhere to be found. Would always be the team that came up short to Jeter's team. So this year, we literally, this fall, might have the chance to have the exact same pivot point we had in the early 90s, depending on who advances further in the postseason between Gunnar and Anthony Volpe. It really does feel like whichever one goes further this year has a chance to establish themselves as the one who's a winner, the one who's on the winning team. It could be Henderson. It could be Volpe, but either way, one's going to be the Jeter and one's going to be the Nomar. And right now it kind of feels like better stats, Gunnar. You know, now we need to figure out if the Yankees are going to be the team that has that championship legacy and championship fabric, or if it's going to be the Orioles. And the Orioles have a one-year head start, and they got swept out of the wildcard series last year. So we have to see. But it's crazy. The comparisons are nuts, and we're probably set up to have an even tighter parallel this fall.
Yeah. It's surely interesting, one would say. I like the competition, though. I like even having the discourse just existing like this. I'm fine with arguing with people. You know, people are arguing with me, as always. But if we have a reason to build that up and the postseason comes around and maybe the Yanks and O's are playing each other, or maybe, you know, the Yanks and Royals are playing each other, then that will be the true end of the argument, depending on what the outcome of said series is. So let's keep it going. Keep building it up. Make it entertaining for us. And, yeah, we'll see what's said in the end, right?
Yep. The lines have not been drawn. But, yeah, all three are really good players. I mean, like, for those of you saying, that's the other thing, too. Like, Henderson and Witt are better. Yeah, sure. Maybe. I mean, seems like we're talking about three great shortstops, probably the top three young shortstops in the game. So right now, yeah.
Ranking people. Oh, power ranking. Ain't it power ranking shortstops this week? It's like, okay, cool. Yeah. And then it'll fucking change next week. And then what? Everything you wasted your breath on the week before now doesn't exist, and now you're what are you doing this week?
Yeah.
You're doubling down on something that you were wrong about, or you're just going around in a circle.
Stephen A. Smith getting on the air the other day saying, I can't believe what's happened to sports media or whatever. What is the industry that I fell in love with? I don't know. You, man. you happened. That's where we're at. I mean, strangest moment of this series. Wasn't that weird a series other than just the jarring visual stuff of like Higgy in a Padres uniform.
Yeah.
And just getting sent into nap time by Marcus Stroman over and over again. These slow breakers that he was just baffled by. It's pretty weird. I'm shocked that we didn't see Michael King again. We mentioned that earlier. But, yeah, I don't think anything was too strange about this series. I mean, the strange moment that turned the third game wasn't strange at all. Gleyber Torres making an error. I mean, that's what I marked as the least surprising moment of this series. I don't know if you even have a strange moment or a surprising one to talk about, or we could just pivot right to talking about the way the third game unraveled, because it was, again, my attention was on the New York Rangers, especially after the series had already been captured. And I would say that attention was justified. I enjoyed watching that Rangers overtime win a lot more than I would have enjoyed the mid-tier of the Yankees bullpen being completely unable to corral the Padres and finally giving them one after a pretty lopsided first two games of the set. But yeah, I wasn't surprised by much after they just took my breath away offensively early on Friday.
Yeah, well, I got two quick ones. I was the strangest moment was just watching the Padres knock around former Dodgers relievers. Why do we bring all those Dodgers reliever, former Dodgers relievers in the finale? I mean, I know why, because we're low on bullpen arms. But yeah, Victor Gonzalez, who's pitched against the Padres a ton, Caleb Ferguson, who's pitched against the Padres a ton, and Dennis Santana has had his fair share of exposure. I know Santana didn't give up any runs, but those three combined for one in the third innings, five hits, two walks, and three earned runs, and that was essentially the difference in the game. Strange, weird. I didn't pull up their career stats, but nonetheless, they've seen those pitchers. The Padres have seen those pitchers before as early as last season. So you're sitting there and you're like, that's weird, creepy stuff. But in terms of surprising moment, let's give a shout to Anthony Rizzo. That piece of hitting against Dylan Cease on Saturday, moved up in the box on a two-strike count, choked up on the bat expecting the breaking ball, and then just lightly pokes one into right field to get the Yankees another run. I know it's hard. I know, and I haven't hit a baseball outside of going to the batting cages to fuck around, and I can't tell you how long, probably since college, so it's been 10 years. But, man, sometimes these guys can do that. You can hit situationally. You can anticipate a pitch that's coming. You can adjust your batting stance. You can change your approach at a given time, depending on who's on base and what's going on. Anthony Rizzo did it right then and there. I know he didn't have the greatest series, but to me, that makes up for a lot. Shows that he can adjust in those moments and give the Yankees what they need in tight spots. We got a lot of the season to go, but let's see more of that from, you know, some other people. I know it's been difficult to come by. We're talking about this every episode. It's never been harder to hit pitching. Everybody automatically throws 95 to 97 now. It's like it's a prerequisite in order to make Major League Baseball. You know, we've talked about the scouting problems, the rise in pitching injuries, the how pitchers are now, trained to be built up. It's becoming more of a factory than it is an art. But let's move up in the box. Let's choke up, poke it out to left field, call it a day. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was surprising to see that. Good stuff by Rizzo, who is going to be at some point maybe de-emphasized, like maybe teetering on the verge of not quite being active and you know, the most core member of this team. And when we talk about ways to lower the payroll this offseason, Hal Steinbrenner noting that, hey, we're going to have to go with some cost controlled guys at different positions. Smells like Jose Trevino, Agustin Ramirez behind the plate, and Austin Wells, Ben Rice at first, maybe. Obviously, that's a 2025 problem, but one that we have to talk about already. I mean, yeah. Before we move on to Birdie and LeMahieu and the Soto scenario and everyone going to talk about the reduction in payroll as if it's the worst thing in the world and not somewhat inevitable, but also very plausible to get, you know, absorb a Soto contract. Do you want to talk about Gleyber Torres a little bit? Because he is hitting better lately. He sure is. And the Birdie injury complicates this a little bit. And I wouldn't even say that the hitting better lately, has it opened your eyes? Has it excited you? I don't believe that it has. But the fact that we're dealing with it gets buried because they do win the series and they do win the series going away and they lead for the first 25 innings of this three-game series before everything unravels. But how did the third game of this set end? They take a 1-0 lead on a Juan Soto double. We think we're rolling again. Can we get a good bullpen outing? Can we pull away? No, we can't. We're trying to seal outs with Clark Schmidt, and the inning begins with a Gleyber Torres error. It always begins with a Gleyber Torres error. And it didn't, again, they didn't lose the series, and it's probably the least watched Yankees loss of the year. just because barbecue, Memorial Day weekend, Sunday, won the first two. People aren't stressing it. No one should stress these individual games at this point, but it's just another one to put in the notebook of they lost. They lost because Gleyber Torres opened the floodgates with poor defense. How much longer can we do? Luckily, we probably won't have to do it that much longer, but I don't understand how people continue to deny that this is an issue. Like, is it going to happen every game? No, but there's this fallacy of, well, it's statistically unlikely because he's already made 12 game-changing errors. He probably won't make a 13th. But actually, it just continues to happen. If you've done it that many times, it seems pretty likely that you'll do it again.
Yeah, and look, I'm not anti-Gleyber Torres. Like, that's what a lot of the stuff that we write about comes off as. And I just feel like a lot of the discourse is you either defend Gleyber Torres to the death or you're nitpicking every little thing that he does wrong. And we love nothing more than when Gleyber Torres performs. It's what we've been waiting for. We know that it would lengthen this lineup to be like undisputed the best in the league if he was hitting 30-ish home runs, like in towards the bottom or in the sixth, seventh hole, whatever it is, playing somewhat reliable defense. Like, that would be amazing. Everybody wants that to happen. But the fact of the matter is everybody's living in the past. And they are still, I feel like, banking on potential that he has and waiting for something to rise from the embers that just is not. Gleyber Torres leads all second basemen with errors, in full-time second basemen in errors this season. He is a seven-year Major League Baseball veteran. That is unacceptable. And guess what? There are a bunch of other defensive miscues in there that weren't scored errors for whatever reason. I don't know why. So his play on the defensive side of the ball has been below average to bad. And I don't know how people are overlooking that. Secondly, you want to talk about Gleyber Torres' stats recently. Okay, yes, he has indeed turned it around with the bat. Over the last 2 weeks, he's hitting 292 with an 840 OPS. That's great. Like, that's 13 games of production. Guess what he's still doing on the entire year? 228 with a 628 OPS. So even these 14 days of what people are calling greatness have barely lifted up his numbers. You want to look deeper into the numbers. He's still not hitting left-handed pitching. He has 29 games against left-handed pitching. He's batting 229. He has one homer and one RBI against left-handed pitching. He's supposed to be hitting left-handed pitching. He's not doing that. I understand his home run against the Mariners was clutch and should have brought the Yankees back in it, if not for the bullpen issues. His home run off Darvish was awesome. That was, you know, the swing I think a lot of us have been waiting to see from Gleyber Torres, because he's looked off balance. He's looked like his timing has been just completely off kilter. But like to get backlash, to suggest that Gleyber Torres might deserve less playing time because of what he's done so far is insane, because he is still not pulling his weight, even with what you would call a dominant 2 weeks. And to me, he's not one of the players where you can justify splicing the stats like that. Like, you could justify doing it for Aaron Judge because he didn't have a full spring training. He was dealing with some under-the-radar injury issues, and he had a slow month to start. And then you're like, oh, look at Aaron Judge's last 2 weeks. They're actually MVP numbers. What Gleyber Torres has done over the last 14 days is, like, pretty good. It's not even otherworldly. It's just like, oh, yeah, this is like what Gleyber Torres did in 2018. This is cool. That was 6 years ago. And in my article that I got called out for, I was advocating initially for more playing time for Birdie and Oswaldo, mm-hmm. Because I think Oswaldo has been a better clutch hitter, which is something the Yankees are going to need at the bottom of the lineup. Gives the team more flexibility with his switch hitting abilities. And he's better on the base paths than Gleyber is. And John Birdie, I know his defense has been a tad iffy here and there, but he has experience playing second base. Or you run into the situation where you could put Birdie/Oswaldo at third and put DJ at second. I don't know if that's plausible right now with DJ's foot injury, but maybe down the road. Nonetheless, all I was proposing was that Gleyber Torres should see a downturn in playing time because we're not seeing the results that we need to from him. And again, you want to cite his really good offensive production over the last 2 weeks? Great. He negated his good offensive production in this series by throwing away yesterday's game on a play that he vocalized himself that he was frustrated with, a play that he should have made. He said that himself. So how many more plays are there going to be that Gleyber Torres should have made that he doesn't? And how many more times are we going to look to justify his last 7 to 15 games of play? And then we're going to look back in 2 weeks to be like, oh, now it's all back to whatever he was doing previously. I understand Oswaldo Cabrera has not been performing the way that he was at the beginning of the season over the last, what, 3-4 weeks or whatever. But guess what? If you're going to sit here and make an argument for Gleyber Torres to play over Oswaldo Cabrera, I think your argument's already been made. Like, you shouldn't have to argue that. You shouldn't have to sit here and be like, oh, well, Gleyber Torres has better stats than Oswaldo Cabrera. Yeah, he's supposed to. Oswaldo Cabrera is a depth piece that has at least carved out a role for himself to, I think, make him a little bit more integral to what the Yankees are doing right now. Gleyber Torres is still a little bit out in limbo, in my opinion. I don't think his offensive production is always more so a surplus than it is additive in the moment. And again, I know he's had a couple of clutch hits that have brought the Yankees back into it over the last couple of weeks, and the results didn't end up in his favor. But Oswaldo Cabrera had the most RBIs after 5 innings that broke a tie or gave the Yankees the lead through the first month of the season, and that has value. He's also much more of a vibes guy. John Birdie is a better defender, a more versatile defender. So I don't think this is crazy. And again, like, there needs to be discipline for poor play. That's just, I think, a basic tenet of the game. I don't care who you are. And that's what the Yankees have lacked a lot. I think that there is value in, you know, showing Gleyber Torres decline playing time over the next couple of weeks when the Yankees have a little bit more, well, when we thought they would have more depth in the infield. Now Birdie's out, and this argument's a little bit moot at this point because Gleyber Torres is not going to lose playing time. But before the calf injury, John Birdie felt like a more valuable player based on what he brought to the table, more threatening on the base paths, more of a contact bat, getting hits in clutch situations, extending Yankees, narrow Yankees leads when he's had the opportunity to do so. And I just don't, I'm sick of just getting randomly called out by Gleyber stands, and they have no other reason than just, it's just because they like Gleyber Torres or they want Gleyber Torres to be something that he was and he no longer is. So that's really my beef with the whole thing.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's just, you know, whether it's sitting him down for discipline or sitting him down for a mental reset, like, I would prefer to give Torres some breathers. And I also just pet peeve, hate being told to check a Savant page, like, as if that's a big own.
Yeah. Have you looked, like, at his peripherals? I don't.
Did you remember to check? They're both bad. Cabrera's peripherals and Torres' peripherals are both bad. So, like, I have to now. I forgot. I got to check the Savant page. Oh, there we are. Torres is 14th percentile expected batting average and 28th percentile expected, you know, ex-WOBA. Like, oh, I'm glad I checked that so that I know that both of these potential infield options have been awful this year at the plate. Great. with little hope of them turning around. Like, that wouldn't that indicate that Torres, maybe his past 2 weeks of recovery have not been legitimate, considering how poor the offensive metrics still are, and that he's more likely to backslide than continue to emerge out of this cabin? The quality of contact is still low.
Yeah.
So go with the bat who's been, you know, better on defense. LeMahieu at second, so that he doesn't have to handle the hot corner. Cabrera at third. But again, all of this was sort of predicated on LeMahieu at second, Birdie at third.
Yeah.
Then LeMahieu giving Rizzo breathers on occasion. Now the Yankees have lost John Birdie, which stinks. And I think that I'm surprised to hear that it's a high degree calf strain, considering the way he collapsed out of the box onto the ground. I don't know how it wasn't torn. I don't know how it wasn't an Achilles, but somehow, you know, as we all know, strain means a small tear. So it was a small tear, but apparently not a full tear. Severe injury, going to take a while for him to recover. I would expect at least 2 months, but presumably this does not knock him out for the season, which is good, because John Birdie is not, like, losing him is not a gut punch. It's not going to stab your season in the heart. You know, you're not going to, it's very unlikely that you're going to look back at the end of the year and say we would have won the World Series if John Birdie hadn't gotten a high degree calf strain in May. But if the injury happens at the wrong time, it's one of those that you look up and maybe you don't regret it in the moment, but a couple of weeks later when you're one more player down, you sort of look up at the clock and you're like, man, it would be, remember we had John Birdie fill in? It'd be nice to have John Birdie here. And Mike Tauchman getting injured in 2019 is the one I always go back to, because when the next man up Yankees lost player after player after player, when Mike Tauchman went down at Fenway in September, you could convince yourself, okay, he's played his role already. He's given this team more than we expected. And now he's gone. Maybe he'll be back for the playoff run. Oh no, he won't be. Oh, well, we still have superstars. You know, maybe we've already seen the best of Mike Tauchman. Who knows? And then when you get down to that playoff series and Giancarlo Stanton injures himself in the ALCS and all you have is Cameron Maben, who was also great that year, but you have nothing behind him, no alternative, no depth, and Stanton has to fight and play compromised. That's the moment when you're like, it was okay. It was a little bit easier when we had Mike Tauchman. And John Birdie's one of those guys. It's a little bit easier when you have a player like John Birdie who can fill in multiple positions, who can give your other guys a blow. If Torres has a really bad stretch of three games, you can plug him in automatically without having to parse Oswaldo Cabrera's slump or Savant Page. You could just say, John Birdie's going to hit me 265 with gap power. He'll lay down a bunt. He's experienced. He's not a youngster whose development is key. He's just someone who's already developed, and I can plug and play him. I know exactly what he is. And now the Yankees don't really have that. They have LeMahieu returns tonight, but recovering from a foot fracture on the same foot that he hurt at the end of 2022 that led to him having a 640 OPS in the first half of the 2023 season. You have Cabrera, who it's not a slam dunk that he should play over anybody right now. He has good wrist stats, but the expected numbers and the recent real production numbers are both quite poor. And you have Torres, who will parlay a good 2 weeks with a game-breaking defensive play in the worst way. Multiple times this season, many times last year. You can just scroll through the almanac. You know, we all remember them. We all know where we were when he single-handedly turned the momentum of that game against the Cubs right before the All-Star break. We all have our favorite Gleyber Torres defensive blunder. You're going to miss that professionalism, and I'm glad that he's not out for the year. And I'm glad that his injury, glad in the thickest air quotes of all time, but comes at a time when DJ LeMahieu is purportedly returning healthy. We'll see how that goes and looks in practice. And your B-Boss just got returned from his rehab assignment, meaning he is the clock expired and he's now active and just a AAA player on the 40-man roster. So that's an interesting move, but again, doesn't give you the stability of Birdie, who we just praise the intentionality of that move. Like, the Yankees need a bench. The Yankees need a veteran bench. The Yankees bench can't just be the five lingering top prospects at the end of spring training who are quad A guys who don't need to go back to the minors but aren't starters at the big league level yet either. Getting John Birdie was like, we have a 265 hitter with speed and a little bit of pop, and he'll play a good defense and versatile defense, and that's somebody who we can insert in the late innings. We don't need to worry about him at all. We know exactly what he is, and it takes a degree of certainty away from the Yankees, though hopefully not for the full season.
Yeah.
My whole thing is like Gleyber Torres has played in every game so far this season. The Yankees don't need – that is reserved for Aaron Judge. That is reserved for Juan Soto. Gleyber Torres does not need to be in the lineup every single day. He is not that integral of a player. He's gone after this season, whether you think so or not, especially if you want to talk about cost cutting. You think the Yankees are going to invest another penny in Gleyber Torres and pay him what he'll cost, I guess, maybe between $12 and $15 million a year? Absolutely not.
Yeah,
doesn't give. This is the best lineup the Yankees have ever had, and it's been that way progressively since, you know, I mean, 2019 was a pretty damn good lineup, but
something was going on there. Like, we've luckily, I think everyone's having these discussions now because this is the best Yankee team in quite a while. So we have to look back on what were the previous best Yankee teams. And 2019 in the moment was incredible, but the juice ball that year was, I mean, the Minnesota Twins set an all-time home run record. The Yankees' best players were Tauchman and Mike Ford and Gio and DJ LeMahieu hitting, you know, whatever. He's obviously quite a good baseball player and an all-star, but even LeMahieu at his peak without the juice ball, I don't think is an MVP candidate. He finished fourth and third back-to-back years, hitting 327 and 364, 26 homers under 2019 conditions. I love LeMahieu, but that is, I mean, what a year. It's just all-time absurd.
Yeah.
So great team, but I think if you put this Juan Soto team in the 2019 conditions, that's a 120-win team.
Easily. But yeah, no, I'm just, you know, you look at Gleyber's situation. He's played in every game. We're over a third of the way into the season, and he is on track to set career lows in everything. And it's not even close. Literally going to be everything. He might narrowly edge his career worst of 9 home runs in 2021 across 127 games. He has 4 so far this season, but he has 46 hits through 55 games. That's on track for a career low. He has 8 doubles. That's on track for a career low. That will just maybe edge his 2021 production, which again was a terrible season. He had 259 with a 697 OPS. On track for a career low in batting average, on base percentage. So he's slugging 327. Between the lack of slug and the defensive miscues, he has everything teed up for him right now. The pressure is off him. Look, we're having this conversation and it's you know, it's like third on the totem pole for what we're talking about in terms of the Yankees right now.
Yeah.
2 years ago, this is the hot button issue. This is Gleyber Torres is a massive problem. His lack of production is holding the Yankees back. Now we're just saying like he can't even be like a C-list supporting act, a C-list supporting actor. Like, then what's the point? Get guys in there who fit the puzzle pieces a little bit better and don't just have a guy in there because he has name recognition and he has potential from 5 years ago that you're still waiting to see awakened. Like, last year, I understand we saw a little bit more of that, but, you know, a meaningless season where he got hot in September and finished with a 273 average and 800 OPS. I'm not invalidating that, but these stats need to be taken within context. He had his best season since 2019 after 3 really bad years when the Yankees were irrelevant and out of the playoff race for 2 months. That doesn't do anything for me. It's just like this empty 2 weeks of hitting. Like, yes, the Yankees have been winning. He has been so far away from the front-facing contributor to that. And, like, people are using that as an argument. Well, it's like, oh, well, his last 2 weeks of play have been great. It's like, yeah, have you noticed it, though? Or are you just going to Baseball Reference and you're clicking splits on 2024 and you're looking at what the last 14 days are telling you? Because if you've been watching the Yankees the last 2 weeks, you would – know for a fact that Gleyber Torres has had little to no impact on what this team has been doing. It's been the top 5 batters in the lineup, and that's been it. So that's it. Just don't think he needs to be in the lineup every single day.
Unironic too, that like he homers on Friday night, and it's the forgotten homer.
Of course it is, because it came after 6 runs ago.
Yeah.
Oh, great. You homered after we already put up 6. That's awesome. Like, that's good for individual stats. Doesn't really matter now. It's the 8th inning and we're up 6-0.
Yeah.
Or but it was the 6th or something. But either way, it's just like, whatever. Okay.
Either way.
Great. Well, this sparks something, but it's not doing much right now.
And, of course, the Sunday game came after. Well, while we're here, we might as well talk about the Juan Soto quotes and the Boris meeting and everybody. Yeah. We're not going to escape this, and it's just breeding some of the weirdest, snooziest takes of all time. We talked about the Hal quotes last time and the fact that he was correct in every facet except for the one where he said that this is unsustainable for him, because it is sustainable if he wants it to be.
Yeah.
But the Yankees payroll is going to be lower next year. Important to note that Juan Soto, if he does get a big contract extension with the New York Yankees or signs a deal with the Yankees after the season, will not be going from $0 against the payroll to $48 million. He's making $31.5 million this year. So the Yankees aren't, like, if they offer him 10 years, $490 million or $510 million, let's say they pay him $51 million annually, you're adding 20 to this current payroll. You're not adding 51. He's already on the team making a lot of money. So remember that. And Anthony Rizzo's option, probably getting declined. Gleyber Torres, that's $15 million off the books, maybe a little more off the books. Clay Holmes, $10, $12 million off the books. They're going to shed payroll, and a lot of payroll is falling off the bone this year. So they could easily sign Juan Soto and carry a $270 million payroll next year only by losing a good deal of talent, arguable talent, not their most essential pieces, and fielding some young players instead. Ben Rice, Ramirez, Wells in the first base mix. We mentioned it earlier in the podcast. So it's not impossible for payroll to decrease and for the team to get stronger. And just a couple of months ago, everybody screamed about how it's absurd that Hal, does he know what team he owns? Where's Blake Snell? Like, we offered Snell $150 million and he passed, and now we have Marcus Stroman. Does he know this is the Yankees? You know, we offered Yamamoto $300 million. We got outbid by the Dodgers. This is embarrassing. And now, all of a sudden, the Yankees have the best rotation in baseball. And when Gerrit Cole returns, hopefully, they're going to have to kick an all-star caliber starter to the bullpen or roll with six starters, or maybe somebody else gets injured, and then they're able to continue unabated. But either way, now there's a pitching logjam on the team that everybody was like, where is Blake Snell? Is Hal Steinbrenner crazy? So I'm not a Hal Steinbrenner blanket defender, but there's absolutely a way for Juan Soto to return, the payroll to go down, and the team to still be extremely good. People always want to rely on youth until it comes time to rely on youth. And they're like, why aren't we spending more? Get this youth out of here.
I thought everyone wanted to be the Braves. What happened?
Sustainable. Aren't you envious of the Red Sox and their homegrown talent or whatever? Like, well, here comes that in New York, but apparently that's not good enough for us. We always have to be shopping for whoever the most expensive 4.5 ERA guy is in any given offseason. I think there's a way that they can sign Soto and put together an extremely good team next year and reduce payroll. I also don't think it's essential to reduce payroll like Hal does. I think if the right opportunity comes along, you shouldn't be scared. He might be scared, and that's the problem, not that they plan to reduce a $310 million payroll where the penalties are really kind of crazy. Even though Hal can afford them, you understand why he might look at them and say, do I have to afford them? Other teams are winning with payrolls under $300 million. Why can't we? Which is valid. We don't know if the Yankees can. We know other teams can. We don't know if the Yankees can. Final point, Juan Soto saying he's open to hearing offers from any other team. Again, why is this a victory lap for people? Of course he is. He's going to free agency. Unless the Yankees blow him away. But even if they blow him away, he's 97% going to free agency anyway. Why are we acting like it's a groundbreaking answer for him to say, if you want to talk to me, talk to me? You think the guy who turned down a massive contract offer from the Nationals is all of a sudden going to forget that he did that so that he could help reset the market value? His whole intention is entering free agency. It has nothing to do with whether or not he's coming back to the Yankees. It has everything to do with entering free agency where the New York Yankees can go talk to him. Aaron Judge entered free agency. He came back. I don't understand why people can't parse the idea that Hal Steinbrenner is going to be extremely serious about Juan Soto and still probably won't sign Juan Soto before he enters free agency and still probably has a better chance to sign Juan Soto than anybody else in free agency. He's not ignoring him.
No, I mean, you heard what Boris said over the weekend. I don't know how we're using Scott Boris as the voice of reason here, but he took Hal Steinbrenner's comments and put them into context for everybody who just read the headlines of the payroll being unsustainable. which we went and dove through the numbers and like, yeah, $500 payroll, nothing.
How much?
$500 million payroll in like 3 years is ridiculous. Again, the highest payroll in 2011 was $170 million. That was 2011. That was not that long ago. It was like $205 million. So we're looking at $100 million increases every 10-ish years. That's nuts. But anyway, point aside, again, I don't care how much money the Yankees spend. We do have to look at this. And if you want to be like the finance guy, right, you have to understand that the payrolls are going up and the MLB median salary is not really increasing. Everybody who's getting paid is the top 10% of the best players in the game, and everybody else is getting the shaft. So if you want to be the guy sticking up for teams paying players or players making more, then stop advocating for the largest contracts in history going to the smallest group of people. Rich get richer, political pod. Scott Boras, however, comes in and says, when you have generational talents, they're not really part of the budget. They are part of how you grow assets. They are a different breed. The only cost concern is the cost of the monument. That was his response to Hal Steinbrenner talking about payrolls getting unsustainable or reaching levels of uncomfortability, especially for a lot of owners who are, you know, look at the Padres. Is it fair for the Padres to pay a luxury tax? They're a mid-market team. They're going out and they're doing all they can to put a winning product in the field, and they're getting shafted by having to pay, or at least previously having to pay, the repeat offenders tax, and that goes back to all the other teams who are not fucking spending money. So yeah, there is an argument here that Hal Steinbrenner continuously complains about, which, yes, is a little bit exhausting, but also there is validity to it. The system is broken in some respect, and it needs to be fixed. But anyway, you're looking at the Yankees payroll for next year, right? Rizzo coming off the books, they're saving $11 million there, assuming that he just gets paid his $6 million option and his $17 million team option goes to the trash. You have Glaber hitting free agency. They're not re-signing him. Sorry, guys. That's $14 million off the books. Tommy Canley's not coming back. Don't care what anybody says. That's $6 million off the books. Verdugo up in the air. That's $8.5 million. Clay Holmes. I like Clay Holmes. I don't want to invest in a back-end closer anymore. We've seen that blow up in our face too many times. That's $6 million
off the books. We like Clay Holmes. Like, yeah. One of the best closers in baseball. But this is the same thing. Different extent, but the Red Sox right now are like treading water at 500. The ownership clearly was focused on next year before this season even started, but they're competitive this year and they're going to be competitive all year and they're going to be annoying. And they're looking at trading Kenley Jansen, and a bunch of people are like, that's ridiculous. I can't believe that the Red Sox owners would neuter this competitive season by trading Kenley Jansen, their closer. Meanwhile, like, relievers, they've already printed 15 relievers in Boston this year.
Yeah.
Andrew Bailey keeps remaking relievers on a dime, and Kenley's been one of their highest regression candidates. Like, it would be malpractice not to trade Kenley Jansen, and it in no way signals a white flag. It's probably it's the only thing you could do, and they're going to be just as competitive without him as they were with him.
Yeah.
So the audacity to suggest that they're giving up because they're trading an imploding asset on a team that just has continued to produce relievers over and over again. These people, I don't know. Somebody give them give all Red Sox fans a banana. Calm down. And Yankee fans are the same way. Like, Clay Holmes, one of the best closers in baseball, but also in a year when you're cost cutting a little bit, probably somebody who you can create either in the aggregate or just replace one for one. They got Clay Holmes for a middling infield prospect. They could do it again, and they might have already done it again because they got JT Brubaker from the Pirates during his Tommy John rehab. I'm intrigued to see what JT Brubaker looks like later this year.
So am I. And he's going to
give away a real. They gave away a real prospect for JT Brubaker, so clearly they think he might be talented.
Yeah, and he's not going to get a raise in arbitration because he's not going to play this year. He's barely going to play. So you keep going down the list. Trent Grisham, at this point, he's a non-tender candidate. You know? They're not paying him $7-8 million next year to stay here for one more season.
No.
Jonathan Loaisiga, goodbye. Caleb Ferguson, goodbye. That's another $5 million. When you add in Grisham, that's another $14 million, something like that. No, probably 12-13 million.
Yeah, it's going to be hard for Grisham to ask for a big arbitration raise based on his 52 at-bats and two hits this season.
Yeah. Lou Trevino, I don't know if that's somebody they pick up. He has a $5 million team option, but that could be another $1.5 million coming off the book. So you're talking about a lot of money here. And then you give what, Juan Soto a, what's he going to make, $45 million a year?
At least, but I mean, yeah. Let's say you can even bring it all the way up to 50. I'm
sure that then you're replacing, you already, they have a surplus of, so you're giving him an extra 19 million. You're creating a surplus. And look, if DJ LeMahieu doesn't work out for the rest of this year, the Yankees are going to find a way to eat some money and have another team take on that money so they could free up some cash in that way. He has 15 million each year through 2026. So they'll get out of that. Brian Cashman can figure that out. Giancarlo Stanton's AAV goes down because the Marlins payments from that trade kick in next year. So that's going to help technically reduce the payroll. And then you essentially have all the same characters in the starting rotation. And then you just have to address the bullpen, which they kind of do every year. And then you're elevating a couple of hitting prospects that you were really bullish on. So I don't, you know, this is, again, I'd like to see what we have in the younger guys. I want to see more of them play. I know it hasn't necessarily worked out for us a ton, but there's been a lot of hype surrounding a number of these guys. And I'd rather see what this core of veterans, you know, you talk about Judge, Soto, Cole, Rodon. Who else is in this lineup? That is, well, Volpe's young. Everybody else is like middling or gone. So, I mean, it's really those four where it's like, that's going to make up the core of your team for the foreseeable future in Stanton, if you count him for the next 3 years. I'd like to see younger players come up, develop under those guys, find their footing, maybe be on all-star trajectory or just everyday baseball player trajectory. That's fine too. Not everybody that comes up needs to fucking break the bank and be a star player. If they can hold their own every single day and log 140 games and be somewhat productive, like that's all this team needs. And I think letting all of these guys go who are a little bit inflated in cost is not a problem at all. And I do think we've seen what mixing the youth has done. The early returns on Anthony Volpe have been great. Clark Schmidt has assimilated nicely into the rotation. I know he's a little bit older, but clearly he's been receptive to everything that the veterans have been teaching him. We need more of that. And it needs to coincide with how the Yankees are going to ostensibly do their business. If they pay Juan Soto, that means you have Judge, Stanton, Cole, Rodon all making, you know, averaging probably what, $35 million a year in salary. It's a lot of money. Can't just keep paying everybody. And then we've looked at the next few free agency classes. Guess what? They're pretty bleak, dude. Pretty bleak. So I don't know what the outrage is here. This is what is the roster. There's roster turnover every year. The Yankees have had a ton of roster turnover over the last like 4 years. It's going to be no different this offseason.
Yeah, it's coming in a big way, and all of it is going to help facilitate Soto returning rather than prevent it. We'll see. We'll see where things land, but there's this misguided notion that they traded for Juan Soto just to purposely let him walk, and that this payroll conversation and Soto saying he's open to offers is just more evidence that the Yankees have no interest in bringing him back. Meanwhile, he's the most beloved Yankee outside of Aaron Judge, potentially even more so than Aaron Judge this year, and he grew up with a family of Yankee fans and has been a perfect fit in the Bronx and would be a perfect fit moving forward, and you don't trade the pitching they traded for Juan Soto not to bring him back for even longer. And you don't say it's plausible for us to bring him back at a high price. We want to make him a Yankee for life. You don't actually intend to do that. So maybe he's a money chaser. Maybe we're all believing in the wrong tea leaves. Maybe the Mets offer him $70 million a year, which is something that Hal Steinbrenner will not match because that is patently absurd. Although the Mets have shown no proclivity to do that yet. Maybe we don't know Juan Soto the way that we think we do, but hey, you know what? Let's focus on winning a championship now. How about that? Because it's actually possible and plausible, and we don't have to parse the wimpiest, most ineffectual quotes of all time. Just I look forward to talking to teams this offseason. Breaking, blaring red siren. Like, no, we can just actually treat that like a statement, a description of free agent. Juan Soto read the Wikipedia page for free agency, and all of their fans popped off. Juan Soto was like, Webster's Dictionary defines free agency as a period where you may discuss your employment with other organizations. And other fans were like, oh, he's so gone. Oh, like there never has a more innocent statement been uttered. And yet we have to deal with this fallout because that's what Yankee fandom's all about. Hey, let's keep winning some more games so we don't have to talk about it anymore. Tonight, Angels, Anaheim, Los Angeles Angels of.
Tomorrow. Yeah, don't forget that. People forget that.
People always forget where they're of. We never will. That's this podcast promise. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, the Angels of Anaheim, famous near Angeles. Hopefully we give them some losses. It would be nice to give the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim some L's this week. We'll see you back here on Thursday after just two games of the series. We can't recap a series because we've got this weird Tuesday through Thursday going on, but we'll recap what we've seen so far. I'm sure Juan Soto will say something else extremely inflammatory, such as I love baseball and have previously played it with other teams in other cities. I'm sure he'll make an absolute bombshell quote like that, and we'll have to address it. But until then, I'm Adam Weiner. You can find me on Twitter at Adam Weiner, but still Twitter to me, folks. It's still Twitter to me, damn it. Thomas Carinante, where can the people find you?
I'm at Tommy's_takes. You can find the both of us at the official Yanks Go Yard Twitter account at Yanks Go Yard FS. Please like and subscribe to the Yanks Go Yard YouTube channel. That would be very nice of you. Head on over to yanksgoyard.com. That's where all our content is. That's where you can publicly call me out, screen grab my article, call me a,
which has never happened before. So it'd be a first time for everything.
Yes. Call me an S head, whatever you want to do. I don't care. I don't. We're having fun. This team's really good. We're looking at ways it can get even better. Nobody here is salty. I can assure you of that. But yeah, thank you guys for tuning in again. Hope you had a good weekend. We'll be back here Thursday. Nestor Cortez, Griffin Canning tonight. I think it's a loss for the Yankees. Not being negative, it's just Nestor's not been good on the road. The Angels are weird, and I feel like they'll get after a left-hander, and then the Yankees are going to win the next two games of the series before they head up to San Francisco. That's my series prediction. We'll see if I'm correct at the end of Thursday, but we will talk to you 2 p.m. Eastern live right here in just a couple days, so don't go away. Take care.
Sure will. You can't miss us as long as you turn on the notifications. Shout-out to everybody who watched today. Shout-out to everybody who listened today. We'll see you on
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.